Hello, everyone. Hope you all had a great weekend. Happy Monday. Many of our followers are in the process of trying to conceive, and about 26% of pregnancies end in miscarriage. Miscarriages have actually become increasingly common over the last few decades, and many families will struggle with miscarriages before carrying a kid to term. So having a pregnancy end early can be very traumatizing for hopeful parents. That's why we're so glad to talk today with Erin Iwanusa, the miscarriage therapist. Erin is also the owner and founder of Taproot Therapy, a psychotherapy and social work practice in New York. So we're going to chat with Erin about dealing with grief during a miscarriage, coping with PTSD, creating healthy boundaries, and so much more. I see you.
Hello, Erin. Hi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time and join us today.
Yes. So thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a miscarriage therapist.
Yeah. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I've been in private practice for about 10 years now. And I realized very shortly after some of my own experience with miscarriage, I often joke a lot with people that, as a therapist, I typically know where to go. So if I'm, if we're grieving and feeling sad, we need this kind of therapist. If we're feeling anxious, we go to this type of therapist. And this was really the first time it's in my life where I wasn't sure where to go. I didn't know, were there therapists that even specialized in this? And so that really, after my own experiences, I became very interested in doing this therapy work with pregnancy loss and miscarriage survivors. Prior to becoming a therapist, I was a writer by trade. And so this has also really allowed me to get back into my own writing, and hence the miscarriage therapist was born after all that. So
that's
seeing such a need for this, I think, in the mental health world was really what drove me to create the miscarriage therapist.
Sounded like your life experience really shaped like how you became the miscarriage therapist. How do you think this made you like also a better resource for others?
That's a good question. I think what we know what we need when we're going through it, right? And recognizing what are all of the tools that I might need or want that I didn't even know if they were available to me. And so I think after kind of going through my own journey, my own process, really recognizing all of the different types of resources we can have, whether that's a very formalized psychotherapeutic approach, whether that's a support group approach, whether that's connecting with other lost parents, whether it's getting some education around what this looks like. So I think shortly after my own losses, diving into research and evidence that we know that can be supportive, I hope has made me a good resource for others as well, or a valuable resource for others.
Oh, I'm sure. I gave a little bit of stats about like in the beginning, in the intro, like 26 of pregnancy do end in miscarriages. So how common it is, besides the stats?
It's so, so common. And I think that's what was incredibly frustrating about my own experience. As I think many miscarriage survivors often hear, for example, after my second loss, My first loss was what we call a chemical pregnancy. So I lost the pregnancy very shortly after a positive pregnancy test. But that second one, we got to our first appointment, and that's where it was confirmed that there wasn't, this was not a pregnancy, basically. And I remember saying to my doctor, why aren't we talking about this? Why haven't I even really recognized that this could be an option, that this could happen to me? And she just sort of shrugged and said, well, this is what happens. it's going to be a blip on your radar. And for some people, miscarriage is a blip on their medical radar. But we don't want to hear that when we're in the midst of it, because it doesn't feel like a blip at all. And then there are others that go on to have recurrent loss that it's definitely not a blip on their radar. So I think we're hearing from a lot of providers, medical providers, mental health providers. Yes, it's common, but we're just not talking about it. And we're not talking about it in the way that I think we need to talk about it, which is recognizing all of the very difficult and challenging emotions that can come with pregnancy loss.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like it's way larger than the blip, because, you know, it's like almost like a life-changing experience, whether you stay pregnant or you lose the pregnancy. You know, it's just crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely have viewed it, you know, my life, especially I think where my own life has taken me after my first loss, but I definitely view my life like pre-pregnancy loss and post-pregnancy loss. And so it is life-changing.
So what are some like common causes of miscarriages?
The number one cause of miscarriages are genetic and chromosomal abnormalities that we have no control over, absolutely no control over. And I think this is certainly one of my own personal soapboxes that I really like to stand on, because I think a lot of folks after a pregnancy loss can really blame themselves. I've heard things anywhere from, you know, maybe if I didn't drink that half caffeinated cup of coffee, if I went fully decaf, or if I changed my body soap or my shampoo or my face wash, and none of those things lead to miscarriage. What leads to miscarriage is chromosomal abnormalities. So I think that's really the big takeaway for people is that this is such a tragic, potentially traumatic experience, and you didn't do anything wrong. You did nothing to cause this. I feel like that's such an important takeaway for us.
Absolutely. Things like out of our control.
Yeah.
So why do so many people believe a miscarriage is their fault then?
That's a great question. You know, I often wonder
I lost you for a bit. Oh, there we go. You're back. Yeah, you're back now.
I don't know where I cut out, but if we can find some control in the uncontrollable, I think the human brain really wants to make sense of things. And I'm going to steal this from Brené Brown, but Brené Brown always talks about the brain wants beginning, middle, end. Even if the ending isn't a good ending, even if it's not the intended ending that we would like, the brain still has that same sense of release when we have that complete narrative. That complete story. And so I think it's in part we want to find a purpose, find a cause, find a reason, and maybe there is something I can do in the next pregnancy to change that. So I think there's a lot of reasons why we can internalize that. But if there's a reason, even if it's not a reason that we necessarily like or is good, quote, good, then I have some control over something that is uncontrollable. So I think it's a very difficult thing.
So what are some good ways to deal with this grief?
Great question. I think a big piece of this is mindfulness. This is a term we throw around quite often right now. It's a very popular term right now. But really mindfulness is just paying attention, just noticing what's present for us. I first have to recognize that I am grieving before I can do something about it. I first have to recognize that I'm sad, I'm anxious, I'm feeling lonely or isolated, I'm feeling angry. I have to be able to name those things before I can get that next level of help. So I think the first big step is just being aware, being mindful of how you're feeling. I'm a therapist, so I'm biased, but I do think finding a wonderful therapist who really knows what they're doing and who is trained in this work I think would be a really important way to process grief, and to have somebody sit with you in that grief is really, really important. But I really think the biggest things are, you know, naming it and also memorializing it. For some of us, you know, we have very big memorials. Others, sometimes it's just having a little memento, something to connect you to this experience and to this loss. I think anything that we can do to really sort of, again, memorialize and formalize grief can be incredibly helpful for us.
I think if finding someone, I love it, finding someone who knows what they're doing, really guiding you through, it's actually, it maybe help you get out of it much sooner than you can, you know, kind of move on and really trying to like live more positively after this experience.
Yeah. And then I think what's so important, especially with pregnancy loss, is that you, there, unless you have either gone through it or you have been trained in how to work with a pregnancy loss, it's very easy for providers to simply shrug it off, right? Like, as we said at the beginning, when doctors say, oh, it's a blip on your radar, you're fine. But I think even mental health providers who don't recognize the importance of this is a loss, this is for some people a trauma, this is a really big event that we go through, and being able to hold that space for a survivor is really, really important.
Absolutely. I was told good luck next time.
Right.
And the blip. Yeah.
Yeah. Or right. Like how I have heard therapists say, you know, oh, well, just try again, or at least, you know, you can get pregnant. And I sort of laughed at one therapist I had, because I've had four miscarriages. And it's like, well, getting pregnant is not my problem. I can get pregnant right away. Like, we get pregnant immediately. So that's really insensitive and really invalidating. That's not my issue here. So I think finding a therapist who really, really specializes in this and is trained in this, I'm working on a resources page for my website right now, which will hopefully be up in the next week or two. But I think the number one resource, if you need a therapist, is going to the Postpartum Support International directory. I think the website is just psidirectory.com. And that's, they're the body that credentials all of us and certifies us. And so that's just a great directory. If you need a therapist, find someone there. They've all been trained through PSI, and you will likely be in good hands through that directory.
Oh, really good to know. I'm in the same camp for.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of wish I knew that resource before then.
I didn't know it until I actually went through the certification process myself. I didn't know that that was a thing until I, so that's like my new soapbox of like, everyone just go to PSI. It's a great resource.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So along with grief also comes shame. So what are the differences between grief and shame, and, you know, how would one feel ashamed after a miscarriage?
Oh, that's a great question. I could talk for hours about this one. So shame, simply put, is defined as I am flawed. I am not worthy, to paraphrase again, Brené Brown, I am not worthy of connection, love, or belonging. Versus grief is an emotional process that we experience through a variety of losses and experiences that we have. Grief is really challenging with pregnancy loss because some folks define it as what we would call ambiguous grief. So I never got to hold the baby. I don't have memories with this person, this future person. I just have this pregnancy test. Depending on how far along you are, right? Of course, we start to develop more connection and more memories and all of that. But it's I think part of it is that there's almost this like disenfranchised, ambiguous grief around pregnancy loss. How can I grieve someone I never even got to meet? But the shame comes in with this I'm not worthy of having a child. I'm a failure as a partner. I'm a failure as a human being. I know, just for me personally, I felt shame as a female and female identifying individual that I could not like my body can't just do what it broke to do. What's wrong with me that it literally built to carry and deliver a baby and I can't do that? And so I think shame can also come in those aspects as well. Or what does it mean with our relationship with our body, our relationship with our partners, our relationship with our family? Shame can be very sneaky in a lot of those ways.
It's so complicated.
Very complicated. Yeah.
So what are some ways to deal with shame?
I think, well, again, great therapists who are specialized in working with shame, and shame resilience is really, really great. I think a huge part of shame and what a lot of research tells us is that, again, that mindfulness approach, I first have to be aware that this is shame. And then a second big thing is being able to speak shame, to talk about it. In my own losses, I definitely had experiences where I just sort of shut down and shut out the world. I don't want to talk to anyone. Yeah, and that can actually make the shame bigger sometimes. And that's the difference too. I want to be mindful of, there are some times where in a very intentional way, we just need some space to ourselves. That's very different than shutting down because of shame. But then there were other times, I do this with my husband a lot. If I start to feel some of that shame come up, I'll just go over to him and say, I'm feeling something. I'm not feeling good. I'm having this thought. I'm feeling ashamed about it. And he's married to a therapist. So he just sort of, yeah, okay. And I'll sit with you for a moment. But sometimes he doesn't even have to say or do anything. It's just the fact that I have said it out loud. I am feeling some shame, or here's this thought that I'm having. That's, I don't want to talk about it. I'm just going to put it out there. And what we know is that shame really starts to dissipate when we can name it and share it. But I do think the important thing is sharing it with somebody that you feel connected to and that you can really trust. I personally, you know, I'm not going to go shout from my rooftop, right? Like tell my neighbors, here's the shame I'm in. That won't really be helpful. But talking to my partner, a best friend, a parent, if you're close with parents or siblings, I think that can be very effective in supporting shame.
Absolutely. It was really helpful for me to talk to my husband, my partner, and also my good friend about it. And then same as you, I think with my first, I was very closed off. But starting from my second, I started talking to my partner and then also my friends about it. And then once I felt like also once you open up, people also open up to you, that they started sharing their story too. And it seems that so many people are sort of in the same boat. And if you started sharing, you really create a support community to around you to help you go through.
It's incredible. I have so many examples of that in my own life of times when either I have opted to share with someone or even times that they've opted to share with me. We were just about a year ago, we were on vacation and there was a couple and their young daughter. And I started talking to the daughter and we were on a ferry ride together on vacation. And the couple decided to share just sort of very, not nonchalantly, but just kind of dropped it into conversation that, well, you know, it took a lot to get her here. It took a lot to get their daughter here. And it was this immediate connection of, you know, and I didn't go into my own details. I just said, I can understand that. I get that. I've had my losses. And it was just this moment of like instant connection. And we never saw them again, right? But the minute you open up and share something, it's very contagious. Vulnerability is a contagious thing in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. You had a really powerful post recently about miscarriages and PTSD. So what's the connection?
Yeah. So PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder is when we perceive an event to be traumatic and we really internalize it as trauma. Some folks experience miscarriage and pregnancy loss as a traumatic event. Others don't, and there's no right way or wrong way to feel about pregnancy loss. But I do think for people who are experiencing trauma and traumatic symptoms after a pregnancy loss, It is incredibly understandable, very common, and an incredibly valid response, because we, I think in this post, I was thinking about, as I was writing it, I was thinking about, we often feel traumatized, again, in situations that we don't have control over. These are things that just sort of happen in a really horrible way to us, and there's very little we could do to change that. And I think with pregnancy loss, that is such an important piece, because we are watching this child, this baby, this pregnancy die, disappear, go away, and really we can't do much about it at all. And that can be perceived as a very traumatic experience. So I think with trauma, when we think about trauma, we can look for a few different symptoms. Hypervigilant thinking, easily startled, reliving moments of the loss, some behavioral things, like if you're having a hard time sleeping, if you're having intrusive thoughts or dreams, those would all be part of a potential trauma diagnosis. And so finding, again, going back to finding a good therapist, good care, find a good therapist who is trauma-informed and can work with that, because we do know, research shows that PTSD is a common experience for people after a pregnancy loss.
You answered my question. I was just going to ask you, what are some symptoms we should look out for, and how do we, you know, tend our mental health post miscarriages? You answered my question.
Perfect. Good.
I know you have support groups. Please tell us about your support groups.
Yes. So my next support group, I try to do them once or twice a month. I have both support groups for pregnancy, for the pregnant partners. And then we have support groups for couples. So my husband will often join for that one as well. We do those about once a month. My next support group that I'm actually doing something a bit different on Saturday, May 6th, coming up just in time for Mother's Day, which can be a hard day for many of us after a loss. I'm going to do a half day retreat just to kind of help us get ready for Mother's Day, process any emotions that come up, still provide some of that support and a place for people to connect and come together. In that support group way, but then we're also going to have some guided exercises, some time together as we prepare for potentially what could be a very hard weekend for a lot of people. So my next support group is May 6th, Saturday, May 6th, virtual. And in the coming months too, as I said, I typically do one to two support groups a month for people. Some are free to the community, some are paid. So there are lots of options too for, because that's another thing. Post-pregnancy loss can be quite expensive medically. Many of us have a lot of medical bills. And so there are some free options for folks who need those as well.
Oh, wow. How do people sign up?
You can send me an email. Or if you go, you can register right through my Instagram. So at the Miscarriage Therapist, you can also go to my Substack, which is themiscarriagetherapist.substack.com. Or if you go to my Instagram, profile and I click on the link in the bio, it'll send you there. But you can also message me on there. So lots of different ways that you can reach out. And you can go to my website, themiscarriagetherapist.com, to learn more there too.
Wonderful. Tell us about the Miscarriage Therapist podcast. Yeah. And what can we learn? What can we expect viewers expect to hear?
Yeah. So I started the podcast, as I mentioned before, I'm a writer, and a therapist, and as I was doing research for my book on therapists and clinicians working with pregnancy loss, I started having just these really incredible conversations with therapists, doctors, support group leaders, people sort of in all aspects of this work. And I thought before the book comes out, I would really like to just start sharing some of these conversations and these interviews, because I think I learned a lot in talking to these people. So that first season of The Miscarriage Therapist was really my conversations that I had with therapists who are doing this work. It has grown and shifted from that now, now that I'm not doing those interviews anymore in terms of book research, but rather it's, you know, talking with people who aren't therapists, writers, everyday people who are just sharing their story, wanting to connect with others, some therapists still, some support group leaders. But yeah, it all just really came out of these really incredible, hard, but incredible conversations, that I was having, with different providers doing this work. I think when I started the miscarriage therapist, you know, there's not a lot out there. The miscarriage hope desk, I think, is sort of the big one. And I found them. I sit on their board, so I'm very involved, with them. But I think other than them, at the time that the miscarriage therapist, when I started the podcast, there just weren't many podcasts out there except for the miscarriage hope desks that were at least, you know, sort of getting some traction. So again, it was create the thing that you need, put out there what you think would be helpful for you. And I hope it's been helpful for other people. I know I enjoy doing it. I really enjoy doing the podcast.
I love it. Where can people hear the podcast?
Yeah, anywhere you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Stitcher. I'm trying to think of all the podcast apps. But anywhere you get your podcasts. And it's just the miscarriage therapist. Or again, I think there's a link on my, the link in my Instagram bio that'll link you to all the different podcast apps that you can hear.
Is your book out?
No, not yet. No. still in the works. But hopefully by the end of this year it should be released.
Please keep us posted. We'll definitely want to share with the community.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for what you do and sharing all this knowledge. And then we're looking forward to also the resource page you're going to be finishing up, like putting it out there. We'll make sure we share that too.
Great. Yes. Well, thank you so much. And it was lovely to do this.
Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for joining. So be sure to follow Erin at The Miscarriage Therapist and then learn more about her support group and sign up, and also the podcast. And then we'll also include all the information in our LinkedIn bio or the posts promoting this Instagram live. So thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you.
Good day.
All right. Bye.